This food blog radio show is brought to you in part by the Cooking Everything Outdoors show, available on iTunes and YouTube. Welcome to Food Blog Radio. Today we have Dorothy Calamaris of whatsdorothyeatingnow.com. Dorothy, welcome to Food Blog Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very excited to be talking to you about your website, because I think you have a really unique flair on things. And before we get tracking into that, perhaps you can introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Dorothy and who you are and where you're from and what you do.
Well, I'm a California native, Oakland native, for that matter. And all I ever wanted to do was be in the food business. I mean, when I was a little kid, I used to get up before my parents and pretend that the kitchen was a restaurant, and I would put on an apron and I would make a menu, and I would anxiously wait for them to get up, and I would make breakfast, and then my dad would give me penny tips. So that was my thing from day one. And then I started working in the food business in my teens, and you know, pretty much have never left. Before I had my own business, I had my own business in the 80s on Piedmont Avenue in Oakland. I worked on the East Coast. I worked for Martha Stewart before anybody knew who she was, and worked for some food magazines there. And then in California, in this area, I worked for Wente Winery, and I worked for a place that's no longer in existence, Curds and Whey, which was one of the first places to sell brie cheese in the Bay Area. And then opened my own business with my business partner, Laura Dirks, in 1985. And we had a cafe, and then we catered up until 2008, although Laura's still doing some catering. And I live with my husband and my daughter, who's a junior in high school. And that's pretty much it.
Excellent. Now, what's the restaurant you said you opened up on Piedmont?
Yeah, it was called Bomb Bars. And Laura Dirks and I opened it up in, I think it was 86. And then we closed the cafe part in 91 and catered, like I said, up until 2008.
Dorothy, you mentioned a little bit that you worked with Martha Stewart before she was famous. And yep. What did you do there?
I cooked for her. When I originally was moved to the East Coast to work for the Pleasures of Cooking magazine, which was a company or a magazine that was owned by Cuisinart. That's when Cuisinart was still owned by Carl Sontheimer. So anyway, I was moved to the East Coast to work on that magazine. I was, quote, a food engineer. That's what they called us, recipe testers and that kind of thing. And then while I was there, I started exploring working in Manhattan and got hired by the Silver Palette people, but had to turn the job down because it was paying $8 or $9 an hour, which is something that just didn't cut it, you know, on the East Coast. And then ended up, I don't even recall how, but I ended up with, I ended up with Martha Stewart. And I have to say, I mean, that was a very interesting experience. I learned so much. Martha had this wonderful knack of hiring these really creative people. So I learned so much from the people I worked with, very inventive. You know, that's her hallmark, you know, unique perspectives, points of view, design, really great stuff. And one of the best days I ever had was with Martha. We had done a catering in the city. She sent the truck back. And then there was, I think, four of us in her car. And we just drove all over Manhattan. And she like double parked. And we like ran into Zabar's or ran into Balducci's, or, you know, she knew, because she's Polish, she knew these great places to get kielbasa or knishes, or, you know, and we just spent the day driving all over Manhattan, collecting up, you know, the best of the best. I mean, it was a great day.
Sounds awesome.
So, yeah, it was. Really was.
Now, you have a culinary background. Are you professionally trained?
No, actually, I wanted to. My parents were, unfortunately, they're both gone, but they're second generation Greek, and neither one of them was able to go to college. So their main goal for both my brother and I was that we get four-year degrees. And so every time I thought about, because my entire time in college, I was working in the food business. I worked as a baker. I worked in restaurants. And so, right, there you go, the Dimitakis family in the San Joaquin Valley. And the family farm is still there, although it's not being farmed. But all, like I said, all I ever wanted was food. But every time I sat thought about sitting my parents down and saying, hey, I'm going to drop out and go to culinary school, I couldn't do it to them. So I got a degree in English. And then once I got out of school, I applied to the Culinary Institute in San Francisco. And the problem was that I would not have had financial aid to cover it. So I thought, well, I'll just work until I get enough money to go to culinary school. Well, you know, then 10, 15 years later, culinary school seemed kind of moot. So right. I just learned from going from place to place, which I have to tell you, as an employer and as somebody who's been interviewed, that hasn't hindered me. It depends on what kind of a job you're going after. If you're trying to work for one of the larger companies like Marriott or Compass or something like that, they like those bells and whistles. But you know, if you're walking into, I don't know this for a fact, but if you walk into a place like Chez Panisse or Beowulf or, you know, the local owned, they're not going to care about that. What they want to see is that you could think on your feet and that you have good skills. And most restaurants make you cook a meal audition, basically. You spend a couple hours or you roast a chicken or whatever to kind of get a sense of how you are in the kitchen and how you move. And if you have that going for you, yeah, that'll do it.
Now, that's cool. You have a wonderful family story and page here that links to various different spots on the web, all about the family and the history. And
yeah, it's great. Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a Greek festival, you know, and people say, you know, do you go? And I'm like, I don't have to, you know, because I grew up in one. I mean, literally, we had a dairy, we had an olive oil press. My uncle Lefty made his own olive oil. They made their own cheeses. There was a clay oven for baking bread. And pretty much every weekend we would go out to the farm and there would be essentially a feast. And my grandfather had a band. He would play the lita, you know, I mean, all the stereotypical Greek stuff. We would sing and dance, you know, and eat. And I thought that was normal. I mean, he did that every weekend. I used to argue that the kids I went to school with were relatives because until I started public school, everybody I knew was a relative. So I figured they had to be related if I knew them. So it was,
that's
it was
awesome.
It was a unique opportunity.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Now you have this rich background, this culinary history. Yeah. What inspired you to start a food blog?
I have always been fascinated with food magazines, and I don't know if you can see behind me in cookbooks, and and I really love the written medium around food. And blogging to me just looked, you know, it's just this great opportunity to have your own little food magazine. I did the thing that everybody does where you think, well, there's a million blogs out there, who needs a million and one? And then I thought, ah, the heck with it. You know, I just have this desire to express myself around food, so I'm going to, you know, go ahead and do it. So that's basically what pushed me into it.
So how did you go about starting your blog? What were the basic steps that you went through?
Yeah, because I'm not a, you know, 20 or 30 year old that's grown up with this as like toast, you know, so easy for them. I actually hired somebody to design the blog. I took a blogging course from a wonderful woman named Britt Bravo in Berkeley. And then armed with that information and some referrals from her, I found a designer. So we hired, it's a woman named, the company is Please Make My Blog Pretty. And so she did the basic design for it. And this was low end. I mean, this was like $100. I wasn't doing the big, huge thing. And then after that, I basically didn't know what to do next until thankfully my daughter, who's 17, took over. I mean, she literally just was like, okay, this is what we do. So I started writing things. She does all the photography and then she posts everything. And, you know, I do the writing and the recipes.
You have it easy.
I do. It's really easy.
Very, very nice.
Good. Till she goes to college, and then I'm going to have to figure it out.
Well, you know, you just upload your recipes and stuff to the cloud. She downloads them and posts it all. She'll have it all figured out for you. Don't worry there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It'll be fantastic. So what was your original goal when you started your website? What were you thinking was going to happen?
My original goal was, you know, as you know, I mean, I've got some real experience in the industry. There's a lot of wonderful bloggers that are very young, that are still kind of making their way through cooking and recipes. And I think that it's also important to have the perspective of those of us who are experienced and maybe are appealing to the people who are at a different point in their lives where you really want your core great recipes. So, and also because I'm kind of a restless cook. In other words, I'm always tweaking recipes and messing with recipes. It's kind of like I'll do the experimenting and then I'll give you the best of what I found. That's part of what I want to say with the blog. Down the road, I would like to use the blog as a vehicle to present cookbooks. One of the books I've been wanting to write for a very long time is about my family, my family background, and all the wonderful things we ate at the farm and all those wonderful recipes. And so, pardon me, you know, as time goes by, I'm looking at being able to use this to advertise and sell some of my self-published books, and maybe even down the road some more food. I don't know if you know, but there's a law in California now that you can cook out of your home as long as you're not using perishable ingredients. And I haven't really researched the law yet. I mean, I know you have to have your house inspected.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's brand spanking new. It just started this January.
Wow.
Yeah, it's to encourage. Honestly, I'm shocked that big business allowed it to go through, to tell you the truth. But it's to encourage all the cottage industries. So I may down the road sell some, you know, products through the blog too. Just see how things go.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I will tell you, if you write a book about your family history and growing up and all those recipes and all those events and such that you did on the weekend, I would certainly be a candidate for purchasing that book.
Yeah.
Just the whole concept sounds fabulous to me. I would be excited to read that.
Yeah. No, again, like I said, it was a wonderful experience. Yeah.
So your writing style, tell me about that, because, you know, every blogger has a style. Some tell a story, some are just, you know, here's the recipe, you know, love it or leave it. What do you impart in your writing style?
I try, and I mean, if people who know me laugh because they say I write exactly like I talk. So I guess it's stream of consciousness, but part of it is I hope I convey how much I love whatever it is, you know, like I haven't really written, let's say, about Greek yogurt, but I mean, I could write reams on Greek yogurt. So part of it is expressing that love for that ingredient or that item. And then the other part of it is trying to make it accessible to people. I taught a cooking class. I work at Mills College. That's my day job. Mm-hmm. And I taught a cooking class at Mills this past semester, and it'll be repeated again next semester. And that was a great experience because I think that I'm trying to demystify cooking, and as much as there's you know, the Food Network and all these other things, and I'm sure all of those things are having a positive impact, it was still very apparent to me in teaching this course, and I had 21 students with really far-ranging skills, that there's still a lot of fear about food and cooking. And so the way I approached the class was, you know, when we did crepes, I said, okay, you know, we talked about crepes and the theory behind crepes and the batter and everything. And then I said, okay, now everybody make crepes and just know you're going to fail. You know, your first 3 to 5 crepes are probably not going to work out right. Then you'll get the hang of it, you know, that kind of thing. So I just hope that in the blog, I express my love and respect for the ingredients, because I'm also very much about high quality food and sustainable food. And then also just giving people, you know, the best result for their time, and maybe giving them a little bit of escape. I mean, certainly if I write about the family farm, that's definitely taking the reader to a different time and a different place.
So you do have personal stories on your blog where you're telling about your life.
I do. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. I think that helps people get to know you a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The personal aspect of any food blog, I think, is an important element, because too many are just a page on your computer and you don't get to find out about it. And certainly that's the reason I'm producing this show, because when I look at a blog, I want to know about who made this chocolate cream roll cake, which I wish I had an internet spoon in or fork I could dip into that right now. Looks just fantastic. You mentioned your daughter takes your photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And she really does a very, very nice job. I mean, she's how old? Junior high?
She's 17. No, she's in high school, but she's going to the San Francisco School of the Arts. So she obviously has a strong artistic eye and skills.
Yeah, so she's done a fabulous job on the photographs. You're very fortunate that she does that. On your recipes, are these all original or?
Yeah, I will only, again, from my time at working at food magazines, I won't republish or, you know, you'll see that if I'm talking about somebody else's recipe, and unless I've changed it, I will say, here's the link. You know, like I read this recipe on this blog. It looked great. I had to try it. And here's the link. If I've changed it significantly, the law used to be you had to change at least three ingredients before you could call it your own. Then I'll publish it myself. But I'm very careful about that. And then some of the recipes that I put on my blog, I've never given anybody. I mean, they're my cherished recipes. And then I'm like, oh, what the heck? You know, everything. I mean, we all think we're so unique, but when I was a kid, I invented a shortbread recipe. And then years later, I found it in a Julia Child book. So I thought, okay, so you can't really invent anything. Everything's already been done.
Yeah, it's true. I've certainly been in the same situation where I've created this incredible recipe and somebody says, well, you know, they have that at this restaurant. Now, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You know, I just invented this. How could they have it? I know the frustration there.
Yeah. So I let go of that.
Okay. So what kind of inspiration do you look for when you're creating recipes?
You know, it's twofold. One is I'll be looking at a cookbook or looking at a blog and something will hit me. Like I got it through 101 cookbooks, but it's actually from Smitten Kitchen. She did one on a ricotta blackberry scone. And so that intrigued me. And you know, so then I started to mess around with that. I mean, I did it as written once, and then I'd made some variations, like I dropped out the wheat flour, I added some almond flour, you know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. The other thing will be, I'll just, which is why it's called What's Dorothy Eating Now, I basically spend my entire day thinking about what I'm going to eat next. And, you know, so sometimes I'll just start, like I've said in this last one about the cookie, literally noodling about something like, you know, I want something that's a little creamy, but I want a little bit of a lemon to it. And, you know, I think I want chicken, you know, and it'll be kind of going down that path. And then I'll just create something in the moment. I mean, weekends are my best time, obviously, because I have time for that, you know, to just mess around. So
you do a lot of, we're looking at the holiday brunch post right now, and you seem to have some themes in there based around holidays or events and such that you like to do. Is that a big thing in your, certainly in your past? So yeah. It's a big thing in your family now?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, not like it used to be. You know, that whole first generation, all my aunts and uncles, I only have one uncle left. And so we're having to work a little harder now to get people together. And since we don't have a farm for 40 or 50 people, it tends to kind of break down geographically to smaller groups. But I do try, because I really believe in having people gather around the table. I think that's how you have your best, not only dining experiences, but personal interaction and, you know, staying in touch. And yes, email's fantastic. And we all keep in touch much better with email, but you still want to, like, you know, get together and hug somebody and talk to them. So
absolutely.
The best way you could get people to come is to feed them. So, what I do is I do more frequent small parties and fewer of the bigger parties.
Okay. How much is your cultural history influencing your recipes?
Well, it's huge, but it's in a funny way, because growing up with all the Mediterranean Greek flavors, when I became about 11 or 12, I think when I really got absorbed in Julia Child, I shunned them all. I was fascinated with butter and cream, and I didn't want to have anything to do with olive oil. And it was all about, you know, the European French flavors. And I went along for quite a few years that way. And then I think probably mid 30s, I started, you know, coming back around to those clean sort of sharper, more pungent flavors. And I would say at this point now, I have room for both. But I do like to take a traditional Greek recipe and sort of contemporize it or Americanize it or Frenchify it, depending on how you look at it. But it depends on what it is. I mean, sometimes what I really, really want, Mom used to, which I hated as a kid because we had it all the time, but now I'll miss it. She would take a zucchini. We grew them in the backyard in Oakland. We grew a bunch of stuff in the yard. She would take big zucchini. She would slit them vertically. And then she would put them in a pot with salted water and boil them till they were like a custard. I mean, I don't, you know, how you got them out of the pot was a real challenge. Then she would put them in a shallow bowl and drizzle them with olive oil and like the juice of a lemon and salt and pepper. And like I said, as a kid, I was like, oh God, it's the zucchini again. But, you know, now I find myself craving it and missing that sharp, acidic with the, you know, beautiful floral olive oil. And then that almost, like I said, zucchini custard. I mean, it's, you know, that texture. So, like I said, I've come to appreciate the value in those kinds of foods and dishes.
Oh, absolutely. You mentioned a key element here, the olive oil.
Yeah.
And your family used to produce it. They no longer do?
Unfortunately, yeah. Olive oil is huge in my family. We had the Dimitakis brand. My uncle Lefty had trees in LaGrange, California that he rented. And then, like I said, there was an olive oil press at the farm. And even when I was a kid, his oil was like $16 a gallon, which, you know, that's a lot of money for the 60s. And it was beautiful. I mean, it was, I constantly look for something like it. It was very, very dense, very flavorful, deep golden. And like Mom said, you know, you only needed a tablespoon for the whole salad because it had such intense flavor. But yeah, I'd give anything to be able to get my hands. I've found a few close. There's that olive oil place I've written about in Murphy's, California, that you can taste olive oils and vinegars. And they do occasionally have some that will be similar. But again, I think it's also, you know, a Greek preference, how Greeks like their oil. So, you know, he pressed this very robust and dense olive oil.
Wonderful. How long does it take you to create a food blog post?
I am fast. I don't know if it means I'm good or not, but yeah, I am fast. I'm an extremely fast writer, creator of recipes, and a cook. And I honestly attribute that to having been self-employed for most of my life. Because who, you know, if you're an hourly employee, I'm not saying that you pad your time. It's just a different mindset. When you're working for yourself, you just get in there and you crank. So I've, you know, trained myself to be really fast. And I'm very fast.
And I am very jealous.
I would say that, you know, like the cookie one, I probably sat down and wrote that in less than 15 minutes.
Wow. Okay. So that process is very, very quick. You have many categories here that you, you know, produced a lot of different things. I mean, we're looking at salads and entrees and desserts and breakfasts and appetizers. Is there one food or one style that you really specialize in or is your favorite?
You know, I try to pretend it's not baking, but I think it's really baking. Mm-hmm. I started out, you know, as a kid, baking is one of the most approachable things when you're a kid learning. My mother was a great baker, so I did learn a lot of tips from her. But I've worked as a baker. I worked as a baker for Wendy, and I worked as a baker for this many years ago, this place called the Egg Shop and Apple Press in Oakland. And, you know, so I've done it. I jumped back and forth on baking and cooking, but I come in through the baker's door, but I go into the kitchen too. So,
okay. Well, where else can people find information about you, Dorothy? You have your website, What's Dorothy Eating Now? And looking at some links here.
Yeah. Thanks to my daughter.
Okay. So this one here, let's go over and take a look at Facebook. Mm-hmm. And how long have you been on Facebook now?
boy, I think almost a year. I think we went to Facebook around March last year.
Okay. Now, how's this been for a medium for you?
It's been good. Very good. Mm-hmm. Facebook definitely increased activity on the blog. I think, and Pinterest, you know, we get a lot of hits from Pinterest, so that does it too.
You have a lot of likes on here. You got people following you, and that's good. So you get some traffic from here. Are any of these recipes here? These are your recipes here. What's Dorothy eating now?
What's Dorothy eating now is, yeah.
Yeah, that is. And then you have a Pinterest board here of your family on the farm, which I think is just fantastic. Look at this.
And then we also have a Facebook on the family that's called "There's Cretans Like Us."
Mm.
So if anybody is really obsessed with seeing a lot of pictures, mm-hmm. you could see that on Facebook as well.
Well, I think this is great. Look at that. This is the oven you were talking about right there.
I love that oven.
Yeah, that's
and it's
fantastic.
Still there, still standing.
Is it? Wow, it's an old brick oven. Yeah, I've always wanted to have one of those in my backyard.
Yeah, my grandmother used to cook 11 loaves of bread there once a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Dorothy, in closing, what is it that you would want to share with all of us that I haven't touched on that you think that I perhaps might have missed?
The only thing I would like listeners and readers, I'd like to encourage people to cook at home more often, because I really think that is key and critical. And, you know, again, teaching my students this fall, it's very apparent that, again, we have all so much food available to us, tons of food available to us, and it's so easy to buy and purchase food all the time. But there's no substitute for something that you've created yourself, that you sit down with friends and with family to eat, and that intimacy and that relaxed environment. And, you know, if nothing else, I really would like to encourage people to go back into the kitchen, or, you know, sit back down at their tables and have a meal. So I think that would be my final message to everybody.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Dorothy. It's been a great little tour of your website, and I would like to conclude this with saying that Dorothy does have a subscribe by email. She is on Facebook. She is on Pinterest. And her website, What's Dorothy Eating Now, has a delightful assortment of recipes, all with her own personal flair and family history influencing all those recipes. Dorothy, thank you so much for being on Food Blog Radio. It was an absolute pleasure to have you.
My pleasure, too. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.